Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh,
don't
yeah.
you know we're going to have a solar-topia.
Started to burn many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing with the great Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are back for another hour in Solartopia. At the half hour, we're going to be talking with Stephen France, one of the great FRANTZ, one of the great experts on glyphosate, the lethal chemical in Roundup and all this other garbage that's spread all over the planet by those sick people at Monsanto. But to begin with, we're going to start with another batch of sick people, Donald Trump and his mafia entourage. We have one of the great experts and my co-conspirator for the last 30 years, Bob Patrakis, on to talk with us. Bob is doing some great writing on the in the internet at thefreepress.org, where he is the publisher and chief writer about Donald Trump and his ties to the Russian mafia and all the rest of the underworld around the world. Bob, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Harvey. Glad to be on.
All right, now, I don't know if you saw it, but I came up, I found on the internet someone had scanned in or transcribed even the last few pages of an article that I worked on in 1972 called Nixon and the Mafia. It was written by Jeff Girth, who went on to actually do a lot of work on Whitewater and was an investigative reporter for the New York Times. But this was the definitive piece on Nixon's connection to the Mafia. Didn't really bring him down, unfortunately, although it didn't hurt, I guess. And Nixon was knee-deep or neck-deep with the Mafia, a good friend of Meyer Lansky. As they say, Meyer Lansky always made money for his partners. And now we see Donald Trump, who I have taken to calling the Manchurian mobster, over his head, really, with the Russian Mafia. And today, or yesterday, they're breaking stories about Jared Kushner. Bob, I don't know if you speak Russian, so if you can talk to our listeners in English, tell us what's going on with Donald Trump and the mobsters here.
Dobar dan, Harvey. I think I've got 5 credits in Srpsko-Hrvatski, an artificial language constructed by the former Yugoslav communists from the University of Sarajevo.
Ah, so what is it? What is the deal here? Is Donald Trump connected to the Russian mafia, and how?
Well, let's see. You've got high-end, you've got money machines. You've got high-end casinos, centered around incredibly pricey real estate resorts. You've got massive amounts of Russian money. And you've got a guy that, you know, had to deal in New York with the U.S. Mafia. So at a certain point, 1 + 1 + 1 equals money laundering.
Well, to quote Steve Bannon, you know, that wonderful source of mainstream wisdom, it's the money laundering that's going to bring him down. So can you describe the process and what's been done? Trump is innocent until proven guilty. So let's hear it. What is the evidence that Donald Trump has engaged in money laundering with the Russian mob?
Well, I mean, you've got some interesting stuff that needs to be probed deeply. The notorious meeting between Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort and the assorted Russian operatives. The meddling in the election. But really, you know, Putin, as czars go, he understands. He's a nationalist. Right? He's not, you know, the traditional internationalist, but a nationalist. And the Russian mafia, you know, as long as it's working for Russia and compromising the people. But Trump has a long history of involvement with the Russian government. Reports are, of course, he first visited there in 1987, Soviet Ambassador Yuri Dubin's invitation. And this has caused many investigative reporters to come to the same conclusion. You know, Craig Unger, who wrote the brilliant book Boss Rove, wrote in the New Republic that, you know, quote, Trump's Russian laundromat is what we're really looking at, is that essentially Unger argues that Trump's money laundering for Russian mobsters is what propelled the worldwide Trump empire. It's the perfect place to launder money. It's Russian money. Right? We've also had the, you know, the recent resurrection of the earlier statement from Donald Trump Jr., you know, when he's speaking at a conference about the holdings of, you know, the Trump fortunes, and that, you know, many of these assets, most of them are coming out of Russia. So Trump's a closely held private real estate company, which is often hard to figure out what's going on there. It's not publicly traded. So according to Unger, it provides the perfect vehicle for illegal money laundering. Again, what you've got, and I quote here from Unger, a flow of highly suspicious money from Russia over the past three decades. At least 13 people with known or alleged ties to Russian mobsters or oligarchs have owned, lived in, or even run criminal activities out of the Trump Tower and other Trump properties. Many use his apartments and casinos to launder untold millions in dirty money, end quote. So that's from one of the great investigative reporters, Craig Unger. Business Insider, which knows a little bit about U.S. news reports, noted that U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions in the Department of Justice recently settled a major money laundering case involving a real estate company owned by the son of a powerful Russian government official, the former vice governor of the Moscow region. So his son, Dennis, owns real estate and is accused of laundering millions of dollars through New York City real estate. And it was unexpectedly settled in May of 2017, after Trump became president. So if you're looking at this, it's an ongoing pattern. And there's just a ton of stuff that points the Trump empire, the international Trump empire, the brand is made with dirty, illegal red mafia money.
All right, well, let's do this, Bob. Can you describe for me and for our listeners, what is money laundering? What is the process? What's involved and why is it illegal?
Well, the money needs to be cleaned. It needs to be laundered because it comes from illegal enterprises.
Like what? Like what? What kind of
like
enterprise?
Human trafficking, gun running, drugs, you know, stealing and looting of art and artifacts. So all of the stuff that's massively illegal and makes big money, like guns and drug running, you've now created all of these profits, and you've got to explain, Harvey, you know, how you got all this money. So it needs to be washed. The easiest, there's an axiom, right? The easiest way to launder money is in the dirt, right? If you're building massive luxury, you know, resorts that are going to cost half a billion dollars, is that it's a great place to take $100 million in illegal arms sales or $100 million in illegal, you know, heroin sales, opium sales coming out of the Golden Crescent, human trafficking money, bribery money, and to turn it into something that's tangible, a closely held corporation in a luxury resort with Trump's name on it.
Oh, my God. All right, so yeah, what you're basically saying is the Russian mob, and I suppose plenty of American mobsters, too, have made tons of money on prostitution, gambling,
gun running.
Those are, must be the big four, yeah. They have too much cash. And so they
got to... Well, they've got too much illegal cash. They've got to launder it so it'll look legal.
And so they just dump it into real estate and inflate. Well, what happens? Tell us the process. If you've got, say you got $1 million and you're only supposed to have 100,000, and so you want to dump it into real estate, how does that process work?
Well, real estate's a good place to launder it. Historically, if you look at money laundering in the United States, the Teamsters used to use, the Yankee Stadium, the people that ran the concession stands there, the Cleveland, you know, municipal stadium as well, because you don't really know how many hot dogs and beers were sold that night. So if you got an extra $50,000, $100,000, a couple hundred thousand, you just write it off as, hey, there's more money in the till. They also used to launder a lot of the heroin money through pizzas, but computers kind of wrecked that. Because when suddenly you said, well, you know, I made $250,000 last year and selling pizzas, and then they look at your bank record and you got $3.5 million in there, they realize maybe you might have had a side enterprise like cleaning dirty money.
Ah, okay. So the theory is now David K. Johnston, who you know and we've had on the show, says that Trump's been doing business with the Russian mob since the 80s. And I actually had a conversation with Craig Unger yesterday, and he told me that that the Trump family, including Trump's father, who is a slumlord in New York, such a bad slumlord that Woody Guthrie actually wrote a song about him. That's quite a distinction, actually, that Woody Guthrie write a song about you. That they were with the Gambino and Bonanno families, two of the five big mob families in New York City, Trump Sr. was involved with. So I'm sure Donald Trump grew up with a lot of Sicilian recipes.
If you're doing development in New York City, you're going to run into the five families. And there was always been talk that the first major product that Donald Trump did was, of course, involved somebody exploiting Polish immigrant labor that was brought in from the Eastern Bloc, people that were getting paid like $4 an hour. So there was a tremendous amount of stories at the time that somebody in the Eastern Bloc was helping Trump, in hire essentially illegal labor in his first major project.
Well, were they covered under DACA, or what's the deal here?
just like the chain migration with his wife and her family.
That's just so cool. I can't. How could you make that up? You know, Donald Trump, the Mr. Anti-Immigrant, all the bad hombres coming in. His wife's parents are basically. Well, how would you characterize their status? I mean, are they wetbacks? Do they swim across the ocean to get here and avoid immigration? What's the deal? Anyway, so let's pursue this now. So I was told, David K. Johnston told me, and probably you, that when they there was a big stoppage of concrete pouring going on in Manhattan at some point, and the Trump Tower was the only one able to get concrete because of their mob connections. Is that credible?
Oh yeah, now that story has been around forever. The interesting story is what the New York pointed out, that throughout the presidential campaign, Trump appeared to be doing business, laundering money for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, that the Trump Tower Baku was a failed luxury hotel project in Azerbaijan, and it looked like its key function was, you know, laundering tons of money. So Azerbaijan, one of the world's most corrupt nations, you recall they have BP, you know, on their police uniforms.
It's kind of like those race car drivers at the Indy 500, right? They have their sponsor's logo on the police uniforms. I like that. Is there like
Zaya Mamadov, the billionaire oligarch tied to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, was worked on the for the Azerbaijan Transportation Ministry for $12,000 a year, supposedly. This is his partner in this corrupt project, you know, that people wondered if it would ever really open.
So if Steve Bannon says that what's going to bring Trump down is money laundering, what's the process here? What are we looking at?
Well, again, I mean, there's two things that can go forward. Either they've got to indict, there's got to be enough evidence. And what Trump is doing and his lawyers and his allies in Congress are screaming, that was before he was president, which this reminds me, as you would call, the great Spiro Agnew. When he resigned as vice president, he pointed out that the bribes he was taking as vice president were leftover bribes still owed from when he was governor of Maryland, and it was traditional to bribe the governor of Maryland. So he had a pretty good point there.
So these were outstanding receivables that he had not yet collected.
And it's been a tradition to bribe for, you know, highway contracts and infrastructure. So, you know, even though he was getting that tax while vice president, all of it was left over from his state corruption.
Well, I think he's got a point there. Maybe we should dig him up and reinstate him as vice president.
Well, Trump's kind of saying the same thing. You're looking into things I did before I was president. You're only allowed to look into, you know, the Russian, you know, election meddling, which he blames on Obama. So if you get involved in, first, your relationships with the five families, the traditional mafia families, as a developer in New York, but then you've got three decades of dealing with the Russian mafia, and they realize that you're the brand. You're the guy to go to turn dirty, filthy drug weapons, human trafficking money into clean, corporate, closely held, you know, capitalist dollars, is that that's what he doesn't want them to look at.
We're talking with Bob Fetrakis here. He's the publisher of the Free Press, Columbus Free Press and freepress.org, my longtime co-conspirator. I mean, you know, you couldn't make this stuff up. There is a quote from Ralph Salerno, I guess, who was a big investigator, saying that someday they'd put a mafia guy in the White House and he wouldn't even know it. And he was referring to Nixon. And Nixon's connections were pretty substantial. He knew Meyer Lansky. This guy, B.B. Rebozo, he hung out with in South Florida, was a mafia guy.
B.B. who accidentally forgot he put $250,000 in his coat pocket. So much money was coming in on the illegal shakedowns. Remember, Nixon could only raise $20 million legally in 72 for Crete, remember, the committee to reelect the president. But they raised $60 million. Rebozo and other people were bagmen. They went around to the Dairy Association and said, hi, you know, we want like $7.5 million from you. And as a result of that, we'll raise the dairy subsidy by, you know, $50-100 million. I mean, those were direct takedowns by mafia figures like D.B. Rebozo.
Right, and then there's the classic story of Wayne Andreas. Was that his name, Dwayne Andreas, who walked into the White House with a paper bag that had $100,000 in cash in it? I mean, oh, for the good old days. But, you know, it's, look what Jared Kushner has just been accused of. He had a meeting with two major corporate executives. And then within, what, a week, a month, he had giant personal loans from these guys. I mean, you know, and then in return, they got a big tax break in the tax bill on deferred interest, right?
Yeah, so you've got this. I mean, a lot of things, most of what they do seems so blatant. And it doesn't seem, you know, like Trump really attempted to hide this stuff with Russia. Seems to be the open secret.
Well, he seemed to be proud of it, actually. You know, and they had Don Jr. there making a public speech about how much money is coming into their operations from the Russians. And it had to be mob money. I mean, all the money in Russia is mob money, right? Are there any legitimate businesses in Russia?
Well, you know, they're oligarchs. I mean, essentially, the way that worked is, say there's $8 billion in oil in the ground and you're a friend of Putin. It's now yours, but you have to finance it. So he would arrange financing at the central bank in Russia, and they would give you the $800 million needed to buy the $7 billion worth of oil, and they would finance it against the asset. So that's how these people became oligarchs overnight. The open, systematic looting of Russian assets and the financing it through the central bank by the orders of Putin. So you could go from, you know, being nobody to being a billionaire in a short period of time, stealing the assets of the Russian people. Not that the United States didn't want to steal it. You know, when they were working for Yeltsin, you know, we allowed our companies to go in there and loot Russia.
Oh, God. You know, it's staggering. So is this, and of course Trump is privatizing everything, going to sell off the national parks. He wants to sell off the Bonneville Power Authority, which is a public-owned utility in the Northwest, which, by the way, idea Bill Clinton first brought up, you know, way back when. Our wonderful liberal Democrat proposed privatizing the BPA. People are going crazy over that. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar asset with dams and power lines and power plants and the whole deal. And Trump wants to, you know, put it up for bid at, you know, fire sale prices to his cronies, who will then raise electric rates and gouge the public. I mean, that's basically how it works. You get in power, you take public assets, you spew this nonsense about the free market, and then you sell public assets to your cronies for billions of dollars. That's the whole scam, and I guess that's what Trump has been doing for a long, long time. Laundering these assets. I mean, he sold, according to Craig Unger, he sold, a dozen and a half condos in his Trump Tower for, you know, tons and tons of money where they were worth, and you know, money laundered from the Russians and just turned them over to all these mob guys. I mean, that's basically how it's worked. So the question is, how's this going to play out? First of all, why didn't this come up in the campaign? And how's it going to play out, Bob?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the investigation is going at a pace that indicate he's either going to be impeached or there will be an indictment brought against him. Remember, Glenn Simpson, founder of Fusion GPS, you know, had testified Russian gangsters operating illegal gambling rings out of the Trump Towers, that this stuff, you know, the newly released testimony that came from the Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, on the meddling, one thing that keeps coming up, you keep looking at the meddling and you keep coming up with money laundering. So I don't know how he can get around an indictment.
I mean, in an indictment, can a seated president be indicted?
He can. I mean, obviously, I think the preference would be for impeachment and a resignation. There's long been talk that if you could circle, around his son and his son-in-law and press them and open them up, the criminal process, they may be able to arrange for him to step down or more minor charges, and he leaves with his ill-gotten gains as one of the world's greatest money launderers.
Well, that would be something. Of course, there's also the possibility if he pardons his son and son-in-law and himself that he could be indicted in state courts. And I'm sure that the New York Attorney General Schneiderman wouldn't hesitate to do that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the claims is that in many of Trump's large real estate deals, you got to remember at one point Trump was one of the poorest men on earth. His entire real estate portfolio had collapsed. I mean, he was like $100 million in the hole, and he was so in the hole, he owned the banks, and they were negotiating about him keeping his yacht, et cetera. But again, when Simpson went before the House Intelligence Committee, said wealthy Russian criminals, Russian mafia people with ties to Putin, committed fraud to benefit Trump. They pretended that they had bought large stakes in his property in order to convince actual buyers with good money, to come in after the banks had refused to give Trump credit. So a lot of these projects, Trump was fairly insolvent and turned down. So his Russian mafia friends, cooked up deals where they claimed to be investors, which brought other people's money in.
Oh, my God. Why didn't this come out before the election? I mean, this has been known for a long time.
Of this was in the steel dossier. I really think people didn't think Trump was going to win. There was a certain shock. I'm pretty sure Trump didn't think he was going to win. And then there was the notion once he won, he would have, his own attorney general in place. So, I mean, the reason he keeps, virtually every day attacking Jeff Sessions, because Jeff Sessions hasn't engaged in a cover-up for him.
Well, that's quite, of course, he did. He was the one who appointed Jeff Sessions, so. God,
he
already
fired his loyalty and they could hide these excesses.
It's unbelievable.
Simpson testified that Eric Trump, Trump's son, once bragged about not needing bank funds in real estate ventures since he had access to a $100 million line of Russian cash that clearly needed to be cleaned up. In the old days in Detroit, when I was there, you got 10% for turning dirty money into clean money.
Wow, that's a good feast. Did I hear Stephen France, are you on?
Yes, I'm here, Harvey.
All right, good. You're getting a lesson in money laundering here. We're going to switch over to you in a minute. Talking with Steve France is going to join us and talk about glyphosate and Monsanto, the other Russian mafia. But in the meantime, Bob Fitrakis, your most recent article about the mob and Trump was at Free Press in the Columbus Free Press and freepress.org. Is that right?
There's one that you and I wrote called Orange is the New Orange, which kind of had all the stuff that was readily available and had been for a long time about the money laundering. All people got to do is do a search of Trump money laundering.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. Virtually everyone knows this. But I'm going to be taking off, but it's been a pleasure. Freepress.org. And good to talk to you again, Harvey.
Well, Bob, do me a favor. Avoid cement shoes. Okay? Make sure your shoes are leather, not cement. All right, buddy. Thank you. Take care. All right. Good. Bob Strakis, publisher of Free Press, Columbus Free Press, freepress.org. My 30-year co-conspirator on election theft reporting, and now this really hair-raising stuff, Donald Trump and the mafia, the Russian mob, the Gambino family, the Bonanno family. He got two of the five New York families behind him there. How he got in the White House, without this being front-page news across the country, I don't know, but what can I tell you?
All right, we're going to news. That's why.
What's that?
I said, because you know who controls the news.
Yeah, exactly. So we got the brilliant Stephen Frantz on the phone with us. Steve, are you in Woodland Hills?
I am in Woodland Hills.
All right. So Steve is in California, a fellow Californian, and has done monumental and extremely important work on Monsanto, which is probably as big as the Russian mafia, or even bigger, and which means my saint, by the way. I mean, I was astounded. It was Thorne Monsanto. You obviously know more about it than I do, Stephen, but my understanding is Monsanto was formed by an Italian or a Sicilian family in the early 1900s, and they were very religious, and they called the company Monsanto my saint, and God help us. If they knew what has become of this horrible, malignant giant that's ruining our Earth. Now, Stephen, you've been focused, and we got a full half hour to talk about this. You've been focused on glyphosate. Can you spell it, pronounce it properly, and then tell us what
it is? No, you pronounce it properly. It is glyphosate. I mean, some people say glyphosate, glyphosate. Those are all wrong. Glyphosate is the correct pronunciation.
So what is glyphosate, and why are we worried about it?
Oh, boy. Well, glyphosate, in essence, is a synthetic – well, it's an herbicide, and it's a synthetic amino acid that looks a lot like glycine, but it's a little – the molecule is a little bit bigger. But that's part of the problem. We'll talk about that as we get into this. But it's the most widely used herbicide in the world, and If you need numbers to go with that, the worldwide production of glyphosate back in 2012, so it's more now, was 1.6 billion, that's million with a B, you know, pounds, back in 2012. So it's more than that now. Glyphosate was the first ever billion-dollar product, pesticide product. And annually in the United States, and these numbers are astounding, nearly 300 million pounds are used on more than a billion acres of U.S. crops.
Every year?
Every year.
Oh,
probably more than that. I think this number was from 2012. I don't know if we have a later number. So the global market, the reason we're getting so much pushback from Monsanto and all this work, and the pushback, we'll talk about that, is the global market is expected to be around $8.8 billion by next year. So
just for
they
one company,
don't want to lose this
is
puppy.
Is Monsanto the only one that sells this stuff?
No. I mean, since the patent ran out, a lot of people make it. But that's Monsanto. I think that's probably the global market. It's probably everybody. The patent ran out some years ago, and a lot of people make it. Most of it's made in China. Even for Monsanto, they import it from China in big plastic carboys that are brought here and then formulated into Roundup and other herbicidal products. So China is the big producer today. I mean, California alone. I mean, just think about it. This is, you know, here we live in the Garden State, you know, producer of so much of the food that's eaten by everybody in the United States plus all the exports. These numbers, I mean, they're just terrible. I mean, the latest data we have, which actually was created for me because the Department of Pesticide Regulation had a bit of a problem in some of their data catchment, and they restructured it. And basically, on food and feed crops in California alone. 9.3 million pounds of just the active ingredient. Now, by what we mean by that is the active ingredient is what is the primary herbicidal action. And there are, you know, emulsifiers and penetrants and other chemicals added to it, which also add to toxicity, different kinds of toxicity. But in terms of cancer, glyphosate alone is contaminated, always contaminated, with a type of chemical that is carcinogenic. So anyway, that 9.3 million pounds, that's just on food, feed and food crops. And then on non-food, stuff that's actually reported would be like for roadsides, golf courses, parks, there's another 2 million pounds. So you have, you know, 11 million pounds in change back in 2015, the latest data, and I'm sure it's more now. So this is just crazy. So anyway, back to what it is.
Well, what is the function of this stuff? What is it? Why do farmers use it, and what function does it serve?
Well, it's a weed killer. So if you have genetically modified crops, they actually, Monsanto actually breeds crops that are resistant to glyphosate. So you can spray the crop wholesale, kill the weeds, but not hurt the crop. And so it makes it easier to manage the growing. The problem is that glyphosate ends up in, you know, it's systemic. It ends up inside the plant. You can't wash it off. So when you're eating conventional foods, and I'll probably say this more than once, everybody, for the sake of their own lives and their children and their pets and the environment, should be concentrating as much as possible on organic foods. Even some organic foods are contaminated, but it's not nearly the level you get in conventional foods. And GMOs are even worse. So use it as a weed killer. And another use of it is, which came along a little bit later, up to about 2 weeks before harvest, they'll spray crops with it. And this is mostly grains, you know, oats, wheat, barley, peanuts, and some other crops. They'll spray with it to basically kill the plant, desiccate the plant, so that, and it kills the weeds there too. So when the harvester machines come through, it's easier. It's a convenience. However, those crops that are sprayed at that time concentrate the glyphosate in the wheat berries, in the oat berries, and so on. So that's why your pastas, your breads, conventional breads and stuff are all heavily contaminated with glyphosate. And it's even at a higher concentration in those desiccant-treated crops than it is in the GMO crops. They're all bad. I mean, they all have it. But just as a heads up, all the pastas and donuts and whatever people eat that are not organic, they're getting a good load of glyphosate. And glyphosate, I should go back to something in the beginning, which I didn't say. Glyphosate was invented back in the mid-60s, not by Monsanto, by somebody else. They patented it in 1974 as an herbicide, but it was invented as a chelating agent, that is, to clean the scum and mineral deposits out of steam boilers and pipes. So it does that. It still does that. It chelates metals. It chelates out essential metals, zinc, copper, a number of essential minerals that you need in your body. So it does that in our bodies so that our bodies can't use those minerals which it needs vitally. And it also chelates them out in the soil where the plants are growing. So the plant uptake, they're nutrient deficient, the plants, because they can't uptake the minerals because they're chelated out. They're bound to soil and some other things. So that was the original invention. Then in the original patent, in the second patent was as an herbicide, which we've talked about. Then the third patent was as a antimicrobial. So think about this. We talked about a billion acres of food crops in the United States being treated with glyphosate. They're also, would people yell if we were treating those crops with penicillin? I mean, it's an antimicrobial. It's an antibiotic, and it contributes. There's an epidemic in this country of antibiotic resistance. This contributes to it because you're getting a low, when you eat conventional foods and GMO foods, you're getting a low dose of antibiotic every time you eat.
Wow. We're talking with Dr. Stephen France, a world leading expert on glyphosate, which is a part of the herbicide spread all over the world by Monsanto. What are the health effects on humans and other living things of glyphosate?
Well, there's a wide range. There's a slide I like to use in my talks that shows, it says in the middle, stop the poisoning, glyphosate kills. And then around the periphery, I have things like, well, I mean, I'll just tell you some of the effects. Starting with animals, it's widely used to kill milkweed. So milkweed is the necessary food for monarch butterflies. It has decimated monarch butterflies in the Midwest, down like 90% kill off of the population of monarchs. It contributes to honeybee deaths. We know there's a crisis in honeybees. I'll get to the humans in a minute. I'm trying to think of what else. Social injustice, think of that, because the workers who work in fields that are exposed to it have more illnesses related to glyphosate than people who don't work near it, than even those of us who eat it, you know, in conventional foods. They get hit hard. It contributes to climate change. We'll talk more about that later because it prevents the sequestering of carbon in the soil because it messes up the soil microbiome. So the normal carbon cycle gets interrupted because the microbes cannot bind up the carbon that would be used for the be incorporated into the plant. So it contributes to the climate crisis. But on the other issues, it lowers IQ. I mean, it's really, you know, none of these can be absolutely proven, just like a lot of things you can't prove causes cancer, you know. But if you look at the data correlations of how glyphosate's been used over the years, and you correlate that with hospital records and so on, the correlation coefficient is so high that to ignore it would be absolutely foolish. We know there's an infertility crisis in the United States. Glyphosate messes up sperm. In fact, so badly that they figure in maybe 30 years or so, the only people who are going to be able to have babies are the wealthy who can afford to have a special surrogate arrangement. So, you know, $30,000-$40,000 to have a pregnancy so that they can have kids. Because everybody else who eats normal foods will be infertile. And like my colleague at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, who writes on this, she's a magnificent investigator, along with her colleague, Anthony Samsel. She just remarks on how impossible life can get because it contributes to ADHD, it contributes to all Alzheimer's, you know, and she does these correlations to depression, gluten intolerance. We think a lot of gluten intolerance is really intolerance to glyphosate, not to gluten. Leaky gut syndrome, all kinds of birth defects, Alzheimer's disease, all kinds of neurological problems. And so where will we be when she predicts, for example, that, well, right now, 1 in 3 children in the United States is overweight. 1 in 4 has some kind of learning disability. 1 in 9 has asthma. 1 in 10 has ADHD. 1 in 12 has food allergies and so on. And she predicts that half of the children, I think by about 2030 something, I forget the exact date, half of the children will be diagnosed with autism, some aspect of autism spectrum disorder. And of course, it's higher in male children than it is in female children. So, you know, when you have children who are disabled in some way like this, you can have one adult take care of a couple kids. But that reverses when they're adults. It takes two adults to take care of each person. Who's going to take care of all these people? They're not, basically cannot be productive in the workplace, can't take care of themselves. I mean, it's a horror show. And for whatever role glyphosate has in this, and it does have a role, as do some other chemicals, to not be doing something about it is absolutely criminal.
It's unbelievable. And now, here's a question. If we abolished glyphosate and subtracted it 100% from the agricultural process in the world today, what would happen to our food output?
Nothing would happen if the farmers learned how to farm. You know, to a large degree, agriculture today, as you well know, is how to use chemicals. Use this chemical for this, you know, to use as a fertilizer. Use this chemical to kill the bugs. Use this fertilizer to kill the fungi. Use, you know, so on. It's actually returning to an older form, a modified older form of agriculture, where you rotate crops. You make sure you have hedgerows, and you know, hedgerows are those areas of uncontrolled growth of all kinds of things between the fields, where insects and animals live that are predators of some of the insects and so on that would come to the, that would harm the fields. You know, birds of prey, those are just some of the natural things. But on a large scale, there's something that's been developed by the Rodale Institute, the Rodale Research Institute in Pennsylvania, where they have what they call, you plant cover crops. You never allow the soil to be bare because bare soil means erosion of various sorts and so on. So whenever a crop is not in the field, you have a cover crop, and usually it's something that is going to put nitrogen into the soil, like clover or some other alfalfa or something that's going to put nitrogen in the soil. So that's growing there. And then when you want to plant it, you bring in these machines, which were invented by them, and they have these machines can do anything from like a 3-foot width to about 60-foot width, so it's good for large-scale farming, called roller crimpers. These machines go through a field and they knock down what's growing there, your cover crop, and bend it so that that stays down. Then when you say you're going to plant corn, then the machine that comes through, so now you have a cover, you have basically a mulch layer. And that mulch layer, of course, prevents weed growth. Then, so that's already the question you had about what are you going to do about the weeds. Then, greatly reduces weed growth, doesn't totally prevent it. But you don't need, nothing totally prevents it. So then when the then they invented machines that would come through, say like with corn, and they actually punch through that mulch layer to put the seed in the ground. Now when that corn plant comes up, it's surrounded by mulch, everybody's happy. There are a whole number of things. I mean, the people were doing some of the really good research on this, Abby Rockefeller's group back in Hudson, New York, that area near Hudson. They do, and a number of other people do this too. They like with biodynamic farming, you know, you let your cows or your animals use a field before you plant it, because then when you plant it, you're taking advantage of all the nutrients provided by the manure from those animals. And again, back to that other system where I talked about the mulching, you're not plowing, because plowing really disrupts the soil microbes and so on. You're better off not plowing. It's better for the soil microbiome and for the growth of the plants. So there are all kinds of agricultural ways. Like here in California, I would love to see them ban glyphosate, but the farmers are going to have to learn, and some farmers do here because they practice these other techniques I talk about. And it's not like you need some spray to take the place of glyphosate. That is not what you need. You need to practice sustainable, organic, biodynamic, what we call organic regenerative agriculture. That takes care of the problem. But you have to learn how to do it. It requires a little knowledge about plants, more knowledge than a lot of farmers would have today. But a lot of farmers do have it. It's a matter of learning, and you could do a switch over in probably a phase out in 3 years.
God, we're talking with Stephen France. Stephen, we're getting near the end of the hour. How do people get a hold of you and see your work?
They can see my work at, if they just, most of my work appears, I have a Facebook page that is mostly devoted to this. Not all, but probably 80% of it's devoted just to this topic. So if they just Google, you know, go on to Stephen France and find me on Facebook.
That's F-R-A-N-T-Z.
F-R-A-N-T-Z. Oh, by the way, I should tell you that we didn't get into this matter. I don't know how much time we have, but on March 10th, I'm giving a presentation on glyphosate at the Topanga Library at 11 a.m., you know, the Progressive Democrats group, and it's open to everybody. It's open to everybody.
Well, I'll come to that. But Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-F-R-A-N-T-Z, and that's how people can get a hold of you on Facebook. Are there other contacts? Do you have a web page?
No, I don't have a web page.
Okay. Well, you got to get one, man. get hip here.
I can't keep up with my research as it is without having to deal with a lot of people wanting more and more information.
Well, your work is absolutely spectacular, and are there places in the country or the world where glyphosate is banned?
The best hope we have right now is France and Italy have. Well, they've said, I haven't followed up on this, but I'm sure it's in progress. Glyphosate will be phased out in a 3-year period.
Is that the law now?
There are countries where it's absolutely banned. I mean, like Bermuda is banned. I think it's Bermuda. Yeah, Bermuda is banned. It's been banned in a number of countries in the Middle East. Of course, it's easier to ban this where you don't have a lot of growth, but Sri Lanka banned it. They did have it banned, and they got a new president who brought it back in. And then when they changed presidents, it got banned again. So,
okay.
El Salvador, there's some other countries where it's absolutely banned. But we're on a bad road here. We just had a hearing last week in Sacramento where Monsanto was challenging the California EPA, the WEHA, which is the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. We fought to get glyphosate on the Prop 65 list. Prop 65 are those chemicals that are thought by the state of California to cause cancer and or reproductive problems. And it was listed as of last July. So Monsanto got 11 state attorney generals together, and they came and they challenged in a hearing 2 weeks ago in February 20th, I think it was, in Sacramento. It's one where nobody could participate except WEHA, the California EPA, and the Monsanto group. And basically the outcome of that, which I've posted on my webpage, on my Facebook page, is WEHA admits glyphosate-containing products can cause cancer, but will not require manufacturers of such products to warn consumers because it could negatively affect corporate profits. Did you get that?
Oh, God. Yeah,
of course. That is the essence. I mean, I think on my Facebook page, I listed where you can go to see. You can read the actual court document, but that's it in essence. What is troubling about this is not only glyphosate, but other, you know, Prop 65 requires notice.
Stephen, we'll have to continue this.
Okay.
Stephen France, go to his website, Stephen France, learn more about glyphosate. Thank you, crew in New York, as Bob Fitrakis. Another great hour in Solartopia. We'll see you next week.
What we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.